Are you looking for ways to strengthen your marriage? Would you like to raise children you enjoy being around? Do you long for a peaceful, orderly home that's a blessing to everyone who comes through its doors? Then you've come to the right place. I'm Jennifer Flanders, a Bible-believing, homeschooling mother to 12 and host of the Loving Life at Home podcast. Join me as we discover what God's Word has to say about marriage, motherhood, and minding the things that matter most. Hello, friend. Welcome to episode 39 of Loving Life at Home. Today, we're talking about how to handle opposite sex friendships once you're married. This topic was prompted by an email I got from a reader a while back. It was brief and to the point. What would your advice be to a wife on male friendships? The writer wanted to know. From the signature, it appeared to have been written by the husband, not the wife, which told me the matter had likely become a point of contention in their marriage already. And so, in case any other couples are wrestling with this same question, I'm sharing my thoughts on the matter in this week's episode and some of the safeguards that my husband and I have put in place to navigate friendships with the opposite sex. First, I think we need to differentiate between a husband or wife who routinely interacts with members of the opposite sex and one who is actively and intentionally seeking out a member of the opposite sex and trying to cultivate an intimate friendship. So in answering the question about whether a wife should have male friends, we first need to recognize that roughly half the world's population is male. So a woman will inevitably have to interact with members of the opposite sex at some point in her married life. She may encounter male bosses, physicians, police officers, male sales clerks, and waiters will try to serve her. She'll have male co-workers, pastors, and teachers. She will likely meet countless other men as she goes about her daily business. Hopefully, all such interactions will be on friendly rather than antagonistic terms. So, in that sense, my answer is yes, a married woman can have male friends. Absolutely, she can. But this sort of friendly acquaintance is not anything that would bother most husbands, and I doubt that's the problem troubling the one who wrote to me. No, his question went much deeper than that. He was really asking, should a married woman have close male friends? Should she cultivate an opposite sex friendship that excludes her husband or makes him feel displaced? Is it appropriate for a wife to pour time and energy into any male-female relationship outside her immediate family? Is a wife free to ignore her husband's reservations concerning the amount of time she spends with a male colleague? Should she be texting, flirting, or spending time alone in the company of a man other than her husband? My answer to all these questions is no. No, 1,000 times no. Not if she wants her marriage to last. Incidentally, the same thing could be said of married men regarding other women, and I'll share my husband's thoughts and practices in reference to that question here in a minute. We need to understand that our focus should change after marriage. My goal as a wife is to cultivate a close friendship with my spouse. I've written extensively on that topic and will link a few of my related books and blog posts in today's show notes. Getting married changes a lot more than the marital status of the bride and groom. It also affects every other relationship either spouse is involved in. Family dynamics shift, responsibilities change, and old friends take a back seat to the new spouse. Marriage calls for leaving and cleaving. When a man and a woman become husband and wife, they should leave home and family behind, not just physically, but mentally and emotionally as well. God originally stated this in Genesis 2:24, but Jesus quoted that passage in Mark 10:7-9. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united with his wife, and the two will become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let no man separate. Malachi 5:14-15 implores us in the same way. The Lord has been a witness between you and the wife of your youth, against whom you have broken faith, though she is your companion and your wife by covenant. Has not the Lord made them one, having a portion of the Spirit? And why one? Because he seeks a godly offspring. So guard yourselves in your spirit and do not break faith with the wife of your youth. We can see that husbands and wives are called to proactively protect their one one flesh relationship and not let anyone come in between them or interfere with that intimacy. What God has joined together, let no man separate. That would certainly include friends of the opposite sex. So instead of pursuing opposite sex friendships outside of marriage, a married couple should pour themselves into establishing a new family, building their own home, investing in their joint future. I love the advice recorded in Proverbs 5 on avoiding immorality. I'll link the whole chapter in the show notes, but I'll just read verses 15 through 21 here. It says, "Drink water from your own cistern and running water from your own well. Why should your springs flow in the streets and your streams of water in public squares? Let them be yours alone, never to be shared with strangers. May your fountain be blessed, and may you rejoice with the wife of your youth. A loving doe, a graceful fawn, may her breast satisfy you always. May you be captivated by her love forever. Why be captivated, my son, by an adulteress or embrace the bosom of a stranger? For a man's ways are before the eyes of the Lord, and the Lord examines all his paths." Notice, this is not just a warning against prostitutes and wayward women. Any woman that you embrace intimately is an adulteress, and we're warned against. The chapter goes on to note that those who stray die for lack of discipline. So let's not be numbered with those foolish spouses, but be mindful of the fact that the Lord is watching over us and sees not only our actions, but the thoughts and intents of our heart. So not only does our focus change after marriage, but our family roles change too. Sure, family is still family and we still love them, but the dynamic is different. No longer are we children under parental authority, bound by their rules and dependent upon their provision. Rather, we're mature adults who must make our own way and answer directly to God for the path that we choose. But marriage not only changes the way we relate to our family, it also alters how we handle friendships. Yes, our friends are still our friends, but time spent with friends can no longer dominate our lives or free time. This is especially true when it comes to male-female friendships. It's good for married couples to develop friendships with other married couples. Look for couples who share and support your values and vision for your family. Couples who are in the same season of life will be able to identify closely with your struggles, which can be good for encouragement and brainstorming, but you should also form friendships with older couples whenever possible. Couples who are a little further down life's road can point out the pitfalls and provide wise and godly counsel. Time spent with socializing with friends of the opposite sex should probably be scaled back to zero unless the spouses are present. Such a practice would be consistent with traditional marriage vows. I don't know about you, but on my wedding day, I pledged to forsake all others and cling only unto my husband. And I meant that with all my heart. You must exercise caution in any relationship outside your marriage. If you want to safeguard your marriage and assure your husband of your undying love and devotion, then you must be extremely careful in the way you relate to and speak of and think about other men. Once you're married, there is no room for flirting with anyone except your husband. You must be more guarded when interacting with the opposite sex. Let there be no ambiguity about your commitment to marriage in general, or to your husband in particular. One way I avoid ambiguity about where my allegiance lies is by following a few general principles in how I interact with members of the opposite sex. First, I do not meet up alone with opposite sex friends or colleagues, and neither does my husband. He was asked to serve on the board of a crisis pregnancy ministry several years ago, and every single time he met with the female founder, he came home and got me and took me with him first. These meetings were in the middle of the day, and I wouldn't have even known about them if he hadn't specifically told me. I would have just assumed that he was at work or running errands, but it was important to him that I be at his side whenever he met with this young, attractive woman, so that there was no ambiguity about where his allegiance lies or about what was going on, either to him or to her or to anybody in our small town who might have seen the two of them together and wondered. We also restrict opposite sex interactions to public forums. Neither of us are sneaking off to meet opposite sex friends or colleagues in secluded spots. When we must interact, we do so in public, surrounded by other people. Then, as a general rule, I don't text or email members of the opposite sex. If I need some kind of information from a male friend or I want to relay some sort of message, I almost always go through his wife. Would you check with your husband's schedule and let me know which dates work for you? Or please let your husband know that Doug and I are praying for him and hope he gets well soon. That sort of thing. Also, we stick to safe topics. Several years ago, my husband had a female colleague, also a physician, who would often ask him for advice on medical procedures and hospital policies and things like that. But when she later filed for divorce and tried to talk to Doug about her marital problems, he told her point blank, "I'm sorry, I'll pray for you, but I cannot talk to you about this. You're going to have to go to one of your girlfriends to discuss it. I can't help you with it. And if people hear you talking to me about the problem, they may assume that I'm in the middle of it, which I'm not, and I don't want to be." Now, you may think that sounds harsh, but I'm so grateful for a man that puts me and the health of our marriage first that way. Then another principle that helps remove ambiguity is speaking highly of your spouse, which my husband also does incessantly. I can't walk through the hospital without nurses and surgeons and techs and housekeeping staff coming out of the woodwork to meet me, and they all say the same thing. "I'm so happy to meet you. Your husband has told me so much about you. You are amazing." As a wife, I try to return the favor, although I don't have as much opportunity to speak with people face to face about how wonderful and brilliant and thoughtful and amazing my husband is. But I do try to convey that in my books and my blogs and my podcasts. Doing so sends the message that I'm very happily married and I'm committed to remaining so. And that brings me to another good principle. Never compare your husband unfavorably to another man. It's neither fair nor respectful. Doing so will only breed trouble and discontent. So don't compare your husband to your father or his father, your father-in-law, or family members or friends or fellow workers or Facebook followers or fictional characters or your fantasy of ideal manhood. If you've developed a habit of comparing your husband negatively to others, either verbally or mentally, turn over a new leaf. If faults have to be addressed, do so prayerfully and respectfully without dragging anybody else into the picture. Instead, assure your husband that he has your whole heart. Affirm him and admire him every chance you get. You may want to avoid even positive comparisons because they still send the message that he's being measured against other men. That can cause feelings of insecurity. For if you make a habit of comparing your husband to others, he may fear that you'll eventually draw a comparison in which he comes up lacking. So when praising your husband, use comparisons only in the most general and superlative terms. Telling him, "You're the sexiest man alive," is acceptable. Telling him, "You're a bit better looking than our mechanic," probably isn't. So let your husband's good qualities stand on their own merit rather than measuring him against a specific person. Build him up without tearing others down. On the same note, I would advise you to take care not to rave too enthusiastically about a member of the opposite sex, real or imaginary. Many wives would feel slighted to hear their husband go on and on about how drop-dead gorgeous some other woman is. Even if it were true and the woman in question was strikingly beautiful, it would seem inappropriate for a married man to provide gushing commentary on that fact. Likewise, most husbands would prefer not to hear the rapturous praise of another man being sung by their wife. If ever your eyes are going to light up when you speak about a man, you better be talking about the one you're married to. In Matthew 5, 27 through 28, Jesus tells us, "You have heard it said, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart." Of course, this goes for wives too. Any woman who looks lustfully upon a man has already committed adultery with him in her heart. Christ's warning applies just as readily to women as it does to men, which is why I think that we as wives should avoid watching movies or reading books that would cause us to stumble in this area. So before you pick up that romance novel or buy that movie ticket or pin that portrait of some shirtless star onto your real or virtual bulletin board, ask yourself whether doing so will be a snare or a trap to you. If so, choose the high road. Pray with the psalmist, "Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer." That's Psalm 19:14. The word for meditation may also be translated thoughts, and there are many more verses that address the importance of our thought patterns. Proverbs 4:23, "Guard your heart above all else, for it determines the course of your life." And Matthew 15:19, "For out of the heart come evil thoughts, adultery, sexual immorality, these are what defile a person." Having eyes only for your husband doesn't really start with your eyes. It begins with your heart and with your mind. So take the battle there and prevail. Now, my husband has written on this same topic from a man's perspective in a post he called Husbands Be Careful with Female Friendships, and I'll link that in my show notes, but I think I'm going to read the whole post now in its entirety. So here's my husband's take on opposite sex friendships in the context of marriage, as well as the principles that he has lived by since we first wed almost 37 years ago. He writes, "We all have friends and colleagues of the opposite sex, and it's important that we learn to interact with them in a healthy way, especially once we marry. If you're newlywed, then you have likely spent a good portion of your life trying to find the right girl to marry. Now that you've found her, you must get out of search mode. The charm and flirtatiousness that served you so well when you were single is now a liability, not an asset. If you have been married a while, then you've probably already figured out a lot of the things I'm about to discuss. Nonetheless, the occasional reminder can be helpful since many of us tend to forget or neglect the basics as the years go by. To begin, let me state that being married doesn't make you a monk. You don't get to live in a monastery somewhere, shielded from any association with females outside your family. You still have to live in the real world, work a job, and interact with living, breathing human beings, roughly half of which are women. For this reason, a few basic rules of engagement are in order. Four basic principles should guide a husband's interaction with women other than his wife. First, protect your reputation. Reputations, as they say, take a lifetime to build, but only an instant to destroy. This is even truer in the modern era, where people thirst for negative news and are quick to believe the worst. Superimpose the lightning speed of modern communication, and you have a recipe for disaster. Don't let it happen to you. There are several simple ways to avoid this problem. First, do not be alone with any woman who is not your wife. It may sound a little old-fashioned, but this sound advice may someday save your reputation and very likely your marriage if only you will follow it. Why risk even becoming embroiled in a he said, she said misunderstanding when it can so easily be avoided? Life is too full of traps and temptations as it is. Why set snares for your own feet unnecessarily? Once there is an asterisk by your reputation, it never goes away. The second principle is a corollary to the first. Don't spend an excessive amount of time with a woman who's not your wife, even in public. When your coworkers or friends notice the two of you together all the time, either laughing or joking or engaged in deep, serious conversation, they begin to wonder why. Their imaginations will quickly answer that question for them, regardless of how innocent your relationship may be. It's no longer a he said, she said situation, but instead becomes a matter of what they said behind your back. Steer clear of clandestine rendezvous with friends or acquaintances of the opposite gender. Always be honest and forthcoming with your wife concerning what you do when you're apart from her and with whom. Keeping secrets spells trouble, no matter how you slice it. And furthermore, some subjects should be off limits for discussion between you and someone of the opposite sex. Body humor is an obvious example. Another is the discussion of marital discord, either yours or hers. Such discussion, if necessary, should always be redirected to a trusted friend or counselor of the same sex. Expressing dissatisfaction with the spouse very commonly becomes the pretext to finding solace in someone else's arms. Don't take that chance. I don't mean to imply that you cannot have opposite sex friends, nor am I advocating making such relationships weird or awkward. I've known people who refuse to even look at members of the opposite sex in the eye, lest they come across as being too familiar. In my opinion, they've let the pendulum swing too far in the other direction, making it hard to even have the simplest of exchanges. Interacting with the opposite sex is both possible and necessary, but you must be careful how and where you invest the bulk of your time and energy. It's more a question of degree. If your dearest and best friend is a woman who isn't your wife, then it's clearly time to reassess. Number two, he writes, guard your heart. Tread cautiously when relating to female friends and acquaintances. Affairs do not happen in a vacuum. They develop over time, so don't let them. Remember also that not all affairs are physical ones. Honoring your marriage vows means remaining faithful in thought and word, as well as deed. It's understandable that we would become close with our coworkers. After all, we spend 40 hours or more together every week. In some cases, this may mean that we actually spend more waking hours together with them than we do with our spouses. Some of these coworkers may be single. Some may be happily married, some unhappily married. Many of them will be smart, attractive, kind, filled with many admirable qualities that your spouse may or may not share. But at the end of the day, no matter how wonderful your female colleagues may be, none of these women are your wife, nor should they be treated as such. And of course, that goes for married women's relationship with men as well. Your spouse is the only one with whom you should cultivate physical, spiritual, and emotional intimacy. Your spouse is the one that you should live with, confide in, depend on, and bear your soul to. My husband continues, the harsh reality is that the woman at work or the gym who seems to really get you only does so because she doesn't have to live with you. She's only observed the fitness version of you or the dressed up and working hard version of you. She has never seen the flatulent, half-dressed, hair in a mess, haven't bathed in 2 days, sports watching, short-tempered, forget to pick up the milk, bring in the mail, or pay the bills on time version of you. And that version of you isn't nearly so attractive. Your spouse sees and knows all of you, not just the cherry-picked, carefully polished facets of your personality. She knows you as a real and complete person, not some smoke and mirrors illusion. That other person doesn't. In similar fashion, the notion that you've found a soulmate other than your wife is pure fantasy. That woman at work or the gym only seems amazing because you don't have to live with her annoying idiosyncrasies. You don't have to live with her inexplicable mood swings or her spitefulness when upset or any of a myriad other things that can so quickly extinguish the hottest flames of passion. Men who stray eventually come to realize the grass on the other side of the fence isn't as green as they had initially thought. Unfortunately, that realization often comes after it's too late. Don't destroy the hope you have for happiness in your present marriage by seeking happiness elsewhere. That's so good. Let me read it one more time. Don't destroy the hope you have for happiness in your present marriage by seeking happiness elsewhere. All meaningful, lasting relationships take work. They demand intentionality. To know and be known requires an investment of time and energy. Invest in your spouse. Then, number three, my husband continues, consider your wife's feelings, and he's so good at this, and how you relate to other women. It sounds simple, but it can be more complicated than it seems. How men view certain words or actions and how their wives view those words or actions can vary significantly. Beware the landmines. When your wife is present, assume her radar is up. You shouldn't eyeball the gorgeous woman in the skimpy outfit who just walked into the room, even if your wife is absent. But when your wife is sitting right beside you, you certainly better refrain from gawking. The same goes for such women in movies or television. Your wife needs your assurance that you have eyes only for her. Likewise, do not get enmeshed in two-hour conversations off in a corner at a party with that cute new girl from work as steam slowly pours from your spouse's ears. As an aside, I don't think that has ever happened in our life, but for some marriages, it might. And most importantly of all, never, ever, ever flirt with anyone except your wife. Of course, you can be kind and hospitable without being flirtatious, and I recommend you do so, especially when relating to your wife's friends. Her friends are constantly judging you and providing feedback, solicited or otherwise, and it would serve you well to be in their good graces. This really isn't that hard. Common courtesy and small talk can go a long way. While you don't want your wife's girlfriends to think you're coming on to them, neither do you want them to think that you're rude. Learn to walk the line. Be friendly, but not flirty. Then my husband continues, point four, be considerate of significant others. All humans are territorial, and men particularly so. It doesn't take much to instigate jealousy or even anger in their partner if you aren't careful. You don't want the spouse or fiance or boyfriend of your female friend or coworker to view you as a threat or a competitor. You should be neither, and your behavior should reflect that fact. A moment of cuteness or flirtatiousness on your end can translate into a lot of heartache and misery on hers. Don't do that to a friend. Just as you should avoid flirting with other women, you should also take appropriate measures to keep them from flirting with you. Neither engage with it yourself or encourage it from them. And that's great advice for women too. Just don't flirt with other guys. That's not a smart thing to do. That's why it's so important, my husband continues, not only for your own marriage, but also for others, that clear boundaries are set. Rarely, if ever, do these boundaries have to be explicitly stated. Usually just talking about your children and your spouse in glowing terms early on and repeatedly thereafter will clarify the situation for everyone involved without things becoming unnecessarily uncomfortable or awkward. And again, my husband is a master at that. The same principle holds true in social settings, especially when alcohol is served. And I'm going to insert here Ephesians 5, 15 through 18. It says, pay careful attention then to how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the Lord's will is. Do not get drunk on wine, which leads to reckless indiscretion. Instead, be filled with the Spirit. How many times has alcohol been a precursor of marital infidelity? So back in 2016, my husband was activated with the Medical Army Reserves, and he continues in this blog post writing about that. He says, I remember attending an out-of-town obligatory social event several years ago at which a woman who'd obviously had too much to drink came over to me, draped her arms around my neck, and asked what I would be doing later that night. When I politely explained that I would be talking on the phone to my lovely wife and our 8 children, she dropped her arms in stunned surprise and quickly moved on in search of a more receptive companion. A couple of months later, that woman was divorced. She evidently found someone who shared her lack of concern for maintaining proper boundaries or showing appropriate consideration of her spouse. If you want your marriage to last and your wife to feel loved, you'll have to do better than that. And that is true for women too. If you want your husband to feel love and your marriage to be safe and healthy and whole and happy, then you've got to do better than that as well. What my husband wrote is consistent with Scripture. 1 Corinthians 6:18 tells us to flee from sexual immorality. Every other sin a man can commit is outside his body, but he who sins sexually sins against his own body or her own body, if you're a woman doing these kind of things. Then Colossians 3:5 reads, put to death, therefore, the components of your earthly nature, sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires, and greed, which is idolatry. These verses, as well as the guidelines we've discussed today, are all as good for wives as they are for husbands. If we want a happy, healthy marriage that goes the distance, we have to be prudent. We must be as wise as serpents and harmless as doves, as Jesus noted in Matthew 10:16. We need to stand firm and be watchful. We should stay alert and of sober mind, knowing that, as we were warned in 1 Peter 5:8, our enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. And he seems especially intent on attacking marriages. Probably because marriage is meant to mirror Christ's relationship with the church. Satan can't touch that, but he's doing his best to mar its reflection. Don't let him. What God has joined together, let no man separate, especially not a close male friend. Having eyes only for your husband doesn't really start with your eyes. As I said before, it begins in your heart and with your mind. So take the battle there and prevail. Thanks so much for listening today. If you have a question you'd like to hear covered on this podcast, message me on Instagram at Flanders_family or contact me through my website, lovinglifeathome.com. Before you go, if you've been encouraged by something you've heard on the show, do me a favor and forward the link to a friend or head over to Loving Life at Home on Apple iTunes to subscribe and leave a written review of the show. Your doing so will help others find me so they can listen too. Until next time, I pray the Lord will bless your efforts to build a loving home life centered on Him.